Blog Talk Radio.
You have made it to Stu and the Nun, an online radio show that looks to inform, educate, and hopefully make you laugh. Stu and the Nun is a show focused on national security, policy, politics, and selfless service. We do this by not only interviewing guests, but also sharing our perspectives and asking you, the listener, to interact with us on our show chat room, via our Facebook page, and on Twitter.
All right, it helps when I'm not muted. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Stu and the Nun here, episode number 39 on this wonderful May 17th, and yet another big political night going on. And I'm joined here again by my brother from another mother, my partner in crime, the man with the plan and the Gatorade shirt, Mr. Toby Nunn. Hello, Toby. How you doing?
Oh, man. I am living the North American dream just off the most refreshing, reinvigorating, we'll call it a vacation that lasted about 48 hours with my wife, my hot wife down on the coast. It was amazing. Port Aransas, Texas, one of the best kept secrets. And I feel great. Big night going on. A lot of implications about what will happen at least on the Democratic race, if someone wins and someone loses. But still lots to talk about, and we got a really cool and interesting guest tonight. So super excited to talk to him. But, man, what a week, huh? A lot has happened in this past week.
It is definitely – there's definitely a lot happening. And let me tell you, there's a lot going on tonight. So for those that are joining us – live during the show, be sure and check us out on our Google Hangouts. You can find that on our Plus Google page or on our Facebook page. Toby just put it up there. You should be able to get to it there. But yeah, a ton going on, man. We got we don't know what bathrooms to go in. We have members of the administration pretty much giving a big finger to Congress and that transparent administration, and now we got really, who would have thought May 17th and Hillary Clinton would be fighting, hoping, begging to win two Kentucky and Oregon? Because if she doesn't, they're going all the way to Philly, I think. I don't think she's not going to wrap this up. So,
man,
yeah, a lot going on.
Such polarizing issues. And the thing that's super exciting in a good way and in a bad way is that you have people trying to hide things in like broad daylight by like, let me just kind of like slip this one in here while you're paying attention over here. You know, the old smoke and mirrors, the bob and weave, the serpentine. And it's like, man, there's some big things, some real big things. This Iran, discussion has really like got big. People don't know what the deal is. And now it's like, you said transparency. What's the deal? And, whatever the deal is, it's not good, and we fooled you. This bathroom issue, holy smokes. Like,
yeah.
Every now and then, like,
I had to
take a second
target,
because, I was thinking about, like, what is something that could, regardless of what side of the aisle you're on, what side, the spectrum politically you're at, what item, what could bring people closer together? And this sounds so crazy to think. This bathroom issue, man, it's pissing a lot of people off. And people are like, wait a second. You're like, you're telling me like, I'm offending people by like not wanting to be watched going to the bathroom. Like one of the hardest things I have to face, in basic training at, you know, the Fort Benning School for Boys, was like going to a bathroom and there were like no stalls. It's like, you know, like, you know, like, this is kind of awkward. Like no one's ever watched this before. So like, you know, fathers across the country are upset. Mothers across the country are upset. And, it's really interesting. And, you know, to be told that if you feel opposed to this, you're a horrible person. It's like, what? Like, because I have human decency, like I'm a bad person because I want to like, you know, not infringe upon like probably the most private thing you could do next to intercourse. Oh, and a bodily function you can't help but do. So like, man, super, super interesting how these little items and these issues are like kind of injecting themselves in, and what a way to go out. And then like blackmailing the American people, like saying, hey, and if you don't support this, I'm gonna pull your money. Like, that's why I like Texas in the green. What?
Yeah. Texas and my home state, North Kakalaki, are both standing up, telling the administration where they could go with that. It is amazing, man. 8 years of hope and change and transparency. I never guessed the change would be changing which bathroom you're allowed to go into or which changing room you're allowed to go. That I guess that's what that was 8 years ago. Hope and change was, hey, I hope I can change the bathroom I get to go to.
Yeah,
we just didn't know. We didn't know the rest of the sentence. That was just the first two statements, the first two words, right? So yeah, it's.
I saw this great meme the other day, and I want to say it was like 1967. JFK says we're gonna put a man on the moon. 2016. Barack Obama, I'm going to put a man in a girl's bathroom. You know, like, wait, here we are. Like, we went from like putting men on the moon to like, I think the most important issue that's facing America is where I can pee.
And well, let me just say, man, we're going to rant right up front, right? We're going to get out, 'cause we got a great guest tonight and I know we're going to eat up a lot of time with him. And I said this to some friends the other day. Every time this administration does something, I really get scared. I don't get scared because they do something so asinine and off the wall, but I get scared because it's so over the top that every time I go, it can't get any worse than this, but inside, I know it's about to, right? So the schools, the bathrooms, all this kind of stuff. And then just the other day, the administration is no longer calling them criminals. But they're now referring to rapists, murderers, and thieves as justice-involved individuals. They refuse to call us criminals. Right? This case,
like,
justice-involved individuals. I'm just like, I mean, which
well, everybody's innocent in prison, so.
Right, everyone. That's right. You know, and every guy that gets pulled over only had two beers. I don't know where they buy these two packs at, but every time you see a dude get pulled over in cops, he's only had two beers. I don't know what they do the other four, but it's only ever two.
The happy hours, just, two for one?
Yeah, I guess, and they just do it one time. But just, I guess because they know one ain't realistic and three means they're hammered, so they think two's going to, you know, cut it down the middle. But, yeah, justice-involved individuals, that's the newest name. That's the newest name. So you can identify with what you want. Like our good friend John Alia said, he identifies himself as the president, so he's going to start taking off his dumps at the White House, right? You identify whatever you want. When I film it, it's without a doubt affirmative action has taken over this country, and we see it with people trying to be firefighters and cops and all this stuff. Hey, you know what? When you go to fill out that job application, go ahead and fill out that you're a Native American female amputee. Identify with whatever you want. You're going to get the job. You'll walk in looking like me or you, but just be like, hey, well, I identified as that and when I applied for the civil service job. Thank you for hiring me. You know, when does it end?
So where do you think the big turning point, like what do you think was the case or like the situation that really made this like, okay, Was it that lady out in Washington State, Condoleezza, or what's her name?
No, you mean the NAACP lady?
Right, exactly. Was she the turning point where she's like, well, I identify as black, and they're like,
the one that was a ginger and turned
right.
into a
light. Right, exactly. But like, you know, was that the turning point? Was that where we as a culture said, oh, man, but she really, really wants to be black, so we're not going to break her little heart. I mean, like, I didn't realize we were giving out participation trophies for racial relations.
Yeah.
And be like, I self-identify as Irish at least 3 days a year. I self-identify as Manx for an entire two-week period when the races are on. And then the rest of the time, like, I just identify. Like, I legitimately say, oh, this is where I'm from. This is who I am. I'm the nun. I'm a nun.
That's
you know,
it.
Bro, you know, like,
it's like
I wish
like
I could choose
friend,
and be like, I'd like to be
friend,
a Rockefeller.
Yeah, our good friend David Bellavia told me he identifies as a small lesbian Asian woman. And if you know David, seeing him in person would be hard to relate to that. But that's what he identifies with. So good for him, right? And if anyone can pull it off, he could. But yeah, it's I don't know. I think it started with that. I don't know where it's ending. But it is. You know, I think back to the wonderful General Honoré from the Katrina.
Raging
team,
Cajun.
Right? Raging Cajun Honoré, right?
Uncle
don't
Russ.
Get stuck on. Don't get stuck on stupid. This country has had been shoved into stupid overdrive, and someone broke the gear shift off, right? They just it's insane. You're digging up monuments from Civil War generals and generals of our founding fathers because someone thinks they had a slave or this or that. You're wanting to dig up bodies. You're wanting to move monuments. People that are gingers think they're black. People that are Olympic winning medal winning men decide to change to a woman. Now he's thinking he's going to change back because, you know, he just had a tuck back the whole time. So now he's thinking, it ain't all what it cracked up to be. You know, it's, I don't know. It's,
but like,
that's
think
why
about this.
That's why I get scared. That's why every time they do something like justice involved individuals, I just go, oh my God, what's next? I can't even fathom what they're going to come out with next as he winds down his time. To January, I swear to God, this dude's going to walk out of the White House burning it to the ground and his country as he can.
It's pretty evident that there's a blatant disregard for history. And, you know, what's heartbreaking is, yes, yeah, some of our history, you know, wherever you might be from, is not good. You know, there's these dark periods. In Western civilization, there was a couple centuries called the Dark Ages. But we celebrate those moments in history because out of those moments came, you know, these wonderful, great advancements. However, like, I kind of feel that because we're trying to hide our history, like, we're regressing into it. Like, this bathroom thing, you know, it's got Rome written all over it, you know?
Right, right. Yeah, so we're waiting on our first guest to call in. We'll probably get some more time to rant, but, you know, I think what we need to do, Toby, and our listeners listening now or tuning into this, I think you and I need to get on doing some of those Facebook Live episodes where we can just get on and rant about that. And I'm going to be down there with you in your neck of the woods here in a couple weeks, so maybe we take that as an opportunity one night to do that.
I'm absolutely excited about you to, you know, you to be down here and hanging out with those of us in the Republic, and you know, it's gonna be a good time. Everyone's gonna have a good time, and
right.
I know you got some work and stuff, but there's always time.
I got to do a little whining and dining for sure. Hey, I need you to try to – I think that link you put up, Toby, isn't the right link. That's a link for someone to join. I think there's a link for them to just watch, if you can do that while I kind of talk. I see our guest is called in. So I'm going to kind of do an introduction, and then I'm just going to bring him on versus in the chat room because I see him called in right now. So our guest tonight is an old friend of mine. I have known him for – oh, man. It's going to be 10 years this year. Hold on, I'm going to cough, I think. It'll be 10 years this year. Joed is a recent special immigrant visa recipient that just came to the United States. He's from Afghanistan, high school graduate, worked for many years for our U.S. Armed Forces, as an interpreter. We shorten that in the military and call them Terps. It's not meant as a slang or a negative thing. It's just what we call them. And I know nobody freaks out over that. He worked not only for multiple U.S. military units, including the CENTCOM Contracting Command. He also worked as a sales rep for Coca-Cola. He taught English. Just a phenomenal guy. I had about, I don't know, 9 or 10 Terps, and I was responsible for him as a senior NCO in Afghanistan. And Joed, without a doubt, one of my favorite. And he's just an awesome guy. We have sat around and talked culture and theology, and we've compared the differences and similarities between Islam and Christianity. A very open-minded guy, and we have spent more hours together sitting in a Humvee waiting on a mission to happen or waiting on the ANA or doing whatever. And I entrusted my life to this guy, and I would still do that today because he is a great friend. And I am thanking God all the time that he got out of country because I was afraid he was not going to. So with that being said, I would like to welcome on to Stu and the Nun for his first radio appearance in the States, maybe his first radio appearance ever, and his first time on Stu and the Nun, my good buddy, Joed. Hey, Joed, how you doing, my friend?
Hey, Top, what's up? Good evening, and good evening, America. How do you feel, hey, brother?
That's it, brother. Hey, I got Toby on with me, man. Say hi to him.
Hey, hi, Toby. How do you feel, brother?
Oh, I feel amazing. Thanks, Joed. Welcome to the show, and welcome to America as well, man. We're happy that you helped my bald brother survive, and we're glad that you're deservingly here with us today. And I hope we're treating you good as North Americans.
Well, you're very welcome, and Top, thank you once again for the compliments. I'm glad to be here, and my dream's coming true, and finally I'm here after many years. So yeah. Good to be here.
Yeah, yeah, good you worked on this a long time, and it's good timing we have you on tonight because they and you can clarify this, but I got word the other day that the special immigrant visa program that you came over on as someone that helped the United States. I got word the other day that that's ending in just a little over 2 weeks, that on May 31st is the last day they're going to allow anyone to come over. Have you heard that?
To the extent of my knowledge or to the best of my knowledge, the State Department, especially the Congress, they extended it to the 31st, the September of fiscal year 2017. So I'm not certain. I haven't heard this, but I think it's still back to the 2017, September fiscal year, that thing, I guess, or I'm not sure that's when the fiscal year ends, right? So,
maybe so. That'd be good. I know, but even that, the wait's got to be getting longer. And if you wouldn't mind giving our, I gave a little bit about your past, so I guess before we get into this too much, is there anything more you'd like to let our listeners know about you? We're keeping kind of where you live, kind of keeping out on the down low. You still have family over there. You just got here. I'm keeping your last name. I haven't broadcasted that. But is there anything else you'd like to let our listeners know about, anything about yourself and your background?
As you already stated it, I'm a high school graduated. I'm interested in playing volleyball, reading books, having debates with different people around the world. views, whether it's politics, you know, I mean, religious, cultures, just for adding up into my information knowledge. And I did work with a lots of, you know, and with some intel guys. And, you know, I work with CENTCOM, Contracting Command. I did work as a sales representative. And, you know, that's, and I mean, before coming here, I was teaching English, as you already brought it up. And, you know, not much. I mean, that's all I can say. My family is still back there. My mother and brother, they're still living in a constant threat. Security is not that good back there. So, you know, I mean, that's all I can say about myself.
Right, right. I gotcha. So you spent about 8 years serving as an interpreter. You saw a lot of U.S. military units, met a lot of people. Is there any one impression you have, or is there any, you know, certain units or anything that kind of stands out that either is good ones to work with or ones that really weren't good? I mean, you know, people understanding the culture, people that were trying to do the right thing, that kind of stuff.
Well, to be honest, I'm going to say what's the truth. I mean, all the U.S., you know, units that I've worked with, they have helped out the Afghan army, you know, the Afghan police, I mean, the Afghan people. And, yes, and I can say, I mean, without without exaggeration, that the team that I really liked was the New York, you know, your team, the team out of Georgia. You know, there was another team from the New York, but they were all, like, mixed up, you know, the embedded, you know, training team. And one of the worst that really is there in my mind, if you remember, we had a party, I don't know what celebration, and I was like, what do you think about Afghanistan? And I think I was recording you. And you were like, you know, I asked you, like, what progress do you see in Afghanistan? And you pointed back to me and you said, like, that is improvement. You know, you're recording and asking such questions. So that's, like, you know, a sentence that I will never forget, Top. And, well, there are lots of units, you know. I mean, I have great memories from a lots of units. I mean, now memories are different. One of the ones we were in a firefight, one were like in the missions and ambushes and night missions and capture and kill missions. So there are lots of memories, and I mean, all of those impresses me, and every bit of them has. Every bit of them have added into my experience. And they have really impressed. I mean, the assistance that the U.S. forces have provided have been amazing. And they are still, you know, considered great. You know, everything that all the U.S., I mean, all the U.S. military have done is worth it. And in the result of that, that's what we have an army, you know, a trained and a professional army right now that still is fighting the enemy, you know, and the terrorists. And that's why they're still, like, winning the war, because of those trainings, because of those sweats that we have, you know, used and all of that energy back there on the training ground.
Right. You know, I remember, you know, I wonder also, you worked with a lot of different units, Afghan units. Did you see a difference in the Afghan units you worked with, of those, some that took it more serious than others, or some that were more tactical than others?
Well, yes, it does matter. It does matter, because from time to time, the units of Afghanistan army change. They were all good, but one of the weaknesses that I realized is that, some ANA commanders, like who are in command, were type of they bought the rank and they didn't really know the tactics and didn't really care about the soldiers. So yes, like our Kandak was a great Kandak. Now the first the first battalion, which was in the border, was a great battalion. Now the second, which was in KK, I guess there were some issues, but the third one in OV, that was also good. Now, so yes, definitely there are differences between the battalions, between all of the battalions, and most of them are now each of the battalion has improved a lot. Because now the complete transition has taken over, and all of them are working, really hard to make the difference, So, and they're winning the hearts and minds of people. But there are still challenges, and they need assistance. And I guess the NATO forces and the Resolute support headquarters back in Kabul is still there. Just a new general took the command. And General John Campbell left. He was a great commander. He did a lot of great things. There were differences, and these differences have been considered.
Right. Is there, we saw a big difference in you guys, right? When we first got there, it was amazing. In the year that I was there, 06 to 07, we saw you guys start to get kind of, got your head cell phones, and then you all started getting laptops. I remember you coming to me and some of the other guys coming to me, Top, help me find a good laptop, and I need a good one, and I need software. And, you guys started getting more on the internet and involved in social media and doing stuff like that. So we saw the same thing from our standpoint, right? And you guys started getting a lot smarter and worldly, if you would. One thing is, even with all that, a lot of access you got and everything, and in fact you were working near the Capitol for a while, it took a long time to get through that State Department program. What any impressions or opinions you had on that? Do you think it was working effectively? Do you think it was just too many people trying to leave, and what, why the delays? They have the delays they do.
Well. The State Department, this SIV process is, it's always stuck there in a bureaucratic, issues, there. It's a bureaucracy. I can't really stand it. It takes a long time for a TARP to get to the state. I still know guys. They're my good friends. I still know them, that they are just without any reason, they're terminated or blacklisted because of these civilian hired, intelligence guys, so-called, what do they call them, like hide system. You remember we did it back to the, we would put bad guys in. Like right. They were, without any reason, they would call this MEP company. They would just call in the TARPs and, and they would ask them a few questions, and they would just put them in the hide system, and they would call, you were terminated, because they were decreasing the force, the force were decreased, were getting decreased, and that's why they were, like, kicking out TARPs and putting them into the hide system and into this level of security, like, threats. Unnecessarily, and that is not so good. And the guys that have applied, here is the problem. First of all, these TARPs were promised by the U.S. government that no one will leave behind, no one will be left behind. All of them that they're saying, a lot of them are complaining that where is that slogan, And I do really feel bad. To a time, like I was in touch with you and I was telling you that I have done everything. If there is something wrong, they should tell me so we can fix it. Now, there are still guys that they are working on them, but my point is that they are left behind. And whether today or tomorrow, I don't want to get into the political talk, But, you know, the HEC leader, the Afghanistan government is reconciliating with the HEC leader. And I don't know what trick, I mean, what kind of plan, what kind of conspiracy is behind that plan. But this HEC leader in each part of Afghanistan has top spies. And I'm sure if he reconciliates with the Afghan government, they are going to pinpoint each of the TARP that work for the U.S., and they're going to take them out one by one. I'm really certain of that. And now these guys are left behind. And the State Department, I mean, I'm sincerely requesting, you know, President of the United States, Barack Obama, you know, John Kerry's Secretary of State, that they need to please have, you know, a delegation that needs to accelerate, speed up this process, and get those guys out. I mean, this is, you know, this is going to be great. There are still guys, I mean, I can name them, Gulbuddin, Farid Poya, you know, Ajmal. I mean, there are lots of guys, Halim, you know, there are lots of guys that are still, I know, were there in the 2nd Brigade, you know, were with their PDMT teams, and they are left behind. And there are lots. One of the bad things that happened is that, instead of bringing those combat troops, now drivers, cleaners, I'm not saying that they do not deserve to come over here, but first, you know, the priority goes to that combat troops because they worked. If it was time to die, we were there. You know, if it was time to, you know, get things done on the, you know, line of, you know, I mean, between life and death, we were there. I mean, cleaners and drivers weren't there, you know. So now, instead of combat troops, more of the cleaners and drivers do get the visa, and they do come. And those combat interpreters are being undermined and forgotten about them.
Hey brother, it's Toby. I absolutely agree with you, and you know, and I think a lot of people don't understand that, you know, there's service to this country, and then there's like service to this country. Like, I'm not disrespecting the people that did laundry. I'm not disrespecting the people that, you know, risked their lives to bring water and fuel from post to post. However, there's a big difference between that and the guy that walked patrol, you know, was in firefights and is a marked man. I didn't serve in Afghanistan, but I spent a lot of time in Iraq. And part of my time in Iraq was, you know, helping establish, you know, the Iraqi army, reestablishing the new Iraqi army. And I went through a lot of TERPs. And, you know, that wasn't my choice. I went through a lot of TERPs because a lot of them got killed. They were immediately targeted. They were a high value target. And I was like very fortunate that one of the most amazing terps that I have, Khalid, he's here in the United States now. He lives in Florida. He's married. He's got a beautiful child. He's out there doing Spartan races, and you know, he's really getting involved in the veteran community and doing some really cool things. But he's the exception. He's the exception to what we're taking care of. And so, like, I know that they extended the deadline for the visas, but what do you think, like, how do you think that vetting system should be? What would you change in that vetting system to give the guys that deserve it, and in some case gals that deserve it, priority? Like, you deserve priority. Obviously, you're here, but how do you – the guys that you just mentioned that are like marked men living with targets on their back, that at any day could open the door and, you know, a guy on a motorcycle rides by and shoots up his house. Like, what would you inject into the system? What mechanism would you put in place to speed up this process or help this process to get the deserving guys here, so we're not leaving them behind?
Okay. Thank you for the question.
Well, my input, I mean, the mechanism or the wedding process that they do have for, you know, wedding the perps to be eligible for the SIV is so strict, and it's so, I mean, it's so lengthy. Why? Because the group that does the wedding process is comprised or made of the CIA, FBI, probably NSA, Afghanistan government, secret services, called so-called NDS, you know, MOI, intelligence, CID, and then the local government, you know, authority representative, and then also the State Department representative. Now, the guys that work with U.S., if they would be bad guys, I'm sure one day or not, one day they would be caught, red-handed, or doing something. Those guys that are there, they, I mean, I can guarantee them. How? Why? Because I feel them the same way like we felt each other back when we were in the mission. I mean, there were a lots of chances. It's not good to say this, but there were a lots of chances for a lots of interpreters that could harm a huge military base, that could harm a huge, I mean, that could do anything to a huge, I mean, to a big unit. But they didn't. Why? Because we felt, then what would be the difference? If it would be such a case, why would we work at all? You know, why would we work at first? I'm not saying that in 100% there cannot be, you know, a bad guy. There were bad guys. They already left. I mean, then they were caught. I'm witnessing back in FOP Burma, which was in the border of Afghanistan and Pakistan. There was a TERP, and, you know, I mean, as soon as we would see, realize, feel something about each other, and then we would get together, okay, how is this guy? Yeah, I mean, before even the U.S., but no, we would know it, because that TERP, before posing the threat to the Americans' life, the U.S. going to absolutely pose the threat to our life, too. And then we were pulled him in. But these TERPs that are left behind, the waiting process, okay, it reminds me of a great point. The machine that, you know, the machine, the test that they do, what's called a polygraph, okay, the PCOS test they call it, or the polygraph. I mean, humans created the technology. The technology did not create the humans. This polygraph test has been, I mean, almost lying for 80 years. Okay, I am totally agree. Okay, let's say that scientist says that, you know, the polygraph is 100% correct. Now, the polygraph set is designed for President's Secret Services members. Now, of course, they should not have even a little bit of weak point. But I'm sure if I put you guys through the PCOS test, you're going to, I mean, the heart rate is going to go up, and you're going to fail. Why? Because it's so sensitive. And there's, okay, I mean, the questions that they're asking there, you know, it's absolutely, have you lied in your life? Of course you have lied, you know, but you don't remember. So, I mean, that's why they're doing the PCOS test on the lots of TERPs. And then when they fail, one of, like, the witching process that they do, the TERP, they need to remove that, because it's a machine, and it's a so sensitive machine. And I mean, if we go into internet, there are lots of scholars, scientists, that they have their input that this, because this machine has been lying almost for 80 years. And this is one of the things that really hurts these TERPs, you know, that really hurts. Okay, for instance, I'll bring this, I mean, I'm now here. Have you ever lied? Of course I lied. You know how I lied? Because there would be cases when ANA wouldn't listen to the mentor, and, you know, they wouldn't be doing the things that they have asked me to. So what would I do? I mean, I have not lied like it was a compromising lie, you know? I mean, if I wouldn't done that, probably then there would be confusion. I mean, probably, how to say, a gunfight, a hand, you know, I mean, a hand-to-hand fight. There were, you know, I mean, there are cultural differences between the United States Army and the Afghanistan Army. So, you know, there were sometimes, I mean, those sensitive situations that we just took, you know, I mean, we solved it with, you know, with some soft words. You know, I mean, from time to time, this, you know, this mentorship changed. At the first, they didn't know a lot, so it was type of supervising, and slowly it decreased down, you know, to being a mentor. So these are such things that are being asked in the polygraph test or PCOS test, and that's why, like, this is like an waiting process, and this is not good. I mean, without any reason, without any legitimate reason, they are being put into the watch list, and to, you know, they are being blacklisted. This is so-called, you know, it is not completely true, and this must be out of the waiting process. I'm telling you this. And if that if this is taken
you're
out,
absolutely correct.
Everything should be good to go.
It's such an antiquated system. You know, we use it here for, you know, a lot of different jobs or opportunities, especially in public service. But it's a very antiquated system, and it's an easy system to beat. Therefore, you know, you should probably get rid of it. I'm learning more about the process of, you know, getting the visas and coming back here. And I got to tell you, on some of it, like, I wish we were doing a better job. I wish we were, you know, repaying your service and your efforts and your sweat, you know, a little bit differently. I mean, obviously, that's some sweat equity into this country. I know Troy appreciates, you know, the efforts that you did. And that relationship is so crucial to nation building. That relationship of, you know, working with the local national to properly understand the cultural differences, to properly understand and respectfully work together within the community is so crucial. And I know you're happy to be here. I just wish we'd, A, you got here quicker, and B, we didn't make it so hard for you.
Well, you know what's bad? You know what's bad is that guys like Joad and all the rest of them, I mean, when you have bad terps, you get rid of them. I mean, you don't take them on mission, whatever. You know, as in my role, I kind of oversaw all of them, and we had terps assigned to certain roles, but you know, my team would come to me and say, I want so-and-so, I want this guy. Now, what that means is the guys that are good, like Joad and a couple others, were getting used all the time. But you know what? They never complained. And Joad knows this. There were sometimes we had some really bad missions down in like Vermel and stuff. And what I would say, when I would tell a terp it's his turn, if they said no or refused, and Joad saw this firsthand, we got rid of them. Like, we bounced them, you know. They were there to do a job, and we needed them. And I think what the State Department and all those folks miss is, these guys were, I mean, they could have lied to us. When we're talking, we don't, you know, we know very little language. And you talk about, you know, a Terp could know up to three different languages. You know, they may know Urdu, they may know Dari, they may know Pashto. So it's not just one language. They could know 3 to 5 languages.
Right.
And all of our interaction, whether we're working with ANA or trying to work with the local nationals to do the nation building we were asked to do, we counted on these guys. What they said was gospel to us unless we had a reason not to believe them. And the Terps were a linchpin to us being a success, because we could ask, hey, ask him if he knows where this is, and the Terp could just say, oh, the American's just saying bullshit, don't worry about it. And then he turned back to us and tell us whatever he knows we want to hear. But guys like Joed and stuff, when they knew we were mad, because we lived together, I mean, we did everything together, they would get out of the vehicle or go, and they would not only say our words, but they would use body language and tone to express it. So if they know we were pissed off, we're in a vehicle and we're just like cussing Joad. Like, Joad, go tell them motherfucker, you know, tell them freaking retards to go do this. And he would get out and start screaming at him, and knowing that he's putting himself at risk, because you never know if an ANA guy is bad. And they go back to their Taliban buddies and say, oh, yeah, the Joad guy, he yelled at me, cussed me out. So if you're going to kill one, kill him. I mean, they were putting themselves at risk every time they did it, but they did it because they knew it needed to be done, because, you know, we were trying to get a message across. And it's very sad that the higher ups have no clue how instrumental these guys were. You know.
So, Joe Ed, what's your plan? I know you just got here and it's a bright, big new world. But you know, one, what's your immediate takeaway or experience of America, and what would you like to do here?
Well, before rolling to that, you know, if you'll let me, I want to have, you know, add up into those comments that you guys just made. Can I do that? I mean, I just want to add up a few words to the speech.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
To the top. I mean, perhaps in my point of view, so far that I work there, and then I work in the contract section and a lot of other stuff. Believe me or not, we have played a vital role in sustaining that relationship with the Afghan government, with the Afghan army, with local people. If a Turk wanted to screw up their relationship, he could definitely do it by any means possible. But none of us wanted to do that, and we all wanted success. And most of the achievements and victory that has been gained in this era is one of the main reasons. I'm not trying to praise myself or praise other Turks, but what is a reality, I want it to be a realistic. And we have played a wider role, and we were that main boundary. I mean, if we wanted to screw it up, we could flip, you know, like how to say, roll the dice, something like that. I mean, we could change everything. You know, there has been matters of life and death, and we have played vital role. For instance, I'll just shortly, you know, I mean, briefly bring up one point. There was a guy who was working with USAID. You know that, I mean, U.S., United States people, assistance to Afghanistan, you know, people. This guy used to go to the governor's office. He didn't carry a weapon. So I told him, I forgot his name, but I remember, I used to call him Ben. So he, I don't know, he lived in California. So I told Ben, when you go to that side, please let me know, because I was in touch with the, you know, Secret Services boss, and with the ANP, you know, like security chief. And I know there were some crickets in the police. I mean, not a lot in the ANA, but, you know, lately there were in the ANA too, but a lot in the police. What happened, the day I told him was Monday. And on this, I mean, after 2 days, on Wednesday, there was a guy who was living in that PNT, and actually he was a cook of the PCC. There was like a provincial coordination center. He could poison that police guy, that cop. He was a cook for that PCC. He could poison the entire food, and I mean, sometime, I mean, U.S. were not eating, and he could kill everyone. But this USAID guy would also eat with the Afghan police. But he didn't do that. He just, abducted a ranger and just took off towards Matahan. There was an area called, Matahan. And then the NDS guy called me, just an ANP abducted a car, you know, a ranger. And I called Ben. I was like, Ben, where are you at? I thought, because he could have taken Ben, because Ben didn't have a weapon. And then when I went over, we had a door. And when I ran to that side, and Ben was there, I mean, almost, he was blushing, I mean, pale, actually. He was pale. I was like, what happened? He was like, this guy just took off and took an AK. I was like, didn't I tell you on this side? This is not good. There were times that we have, I mean, played wider roles, and this is not good, you know. That they are still left behind. Now, coming to the points, that you brought up here, that's what I'm going to do. So far, experience, I mean, it's amazing. It's great to be here. I'm intending to apply for social services, and if I can get a loan, and then I want to continue what's called the bachelor. You know, I'm going to do my college education here.
And then after that, I'm going to see, you know, I'm going to see what's called that, you know, get a job and get my mom over here and my younger brother and also my fiance and just start living here in the U.S. And, you know, and every day I'm learning, you know, I mean, a few minutes ago, I just came back from Walmart and, you know, it's a good place.
What'd you think of that place?
Well, there were lots of crowd. Well, I told the guy that don't rip me off, you know, and she, I mean, it was a female, and she was like, no, we don't do that. I was like, okay, we do that.
Negotiating at Walmart.
Yeah, but she was like, no, and then, well, they do rip off people, to be honest, but, you know, I mean, if I get a lot of money, I'm going to beat, I mean, I'm going to make other stores in order to beat down the Walmart. So it's all about business, and I have a line of opportunity, and I can do anything I want. And probably
that's right, brother.
Will happen
that's
too.
Right.
Yeah.
So, so you've been here. You've been here just a little time, Joed, and it's how have you found the integration process? Now I know I was telling Toby, like, you know, a lot of people don't realize this, but you have to pay the State Department back for your plane ticket, right? Is there anything else you have to reimburse the government for?
Yes, Top, you're right. Well, I have to reimburse back for the plane ticket. There is not a lot, you know, I mean, there's nothing else. This charity community that they call it, either they pay for your rent, or there is this International Rescue Committee called IRC. Either they cover you up, or our RPC, Regional Processing Center. So there are a few of these NGOs, you know, that covers you up. And, yeah, and after 5 months, I have to pay that money. And, you know, I was like, wow, you know, it's pretty quick, but I'm not really used to the system here. Everything is so different. Because roads are huge, I mean, they're big, it's not two lanes of traffic like we used to have back in my country. There are like 6 and 7 and 5.
Yeah.
So everything is so different here. And, you know, I don't see like all a real American where I'm living. I'm not disrespecting, I hope they're not offended, but there are lots of other countries here. Like, you know, when I see like those real guys that talk to real life. And, you know, most of them don't speak English. So I'm like, they need to know the English because, in according to mine, talking other language in front of American is considered rude or, but, you know, I guess they're not following it. Need a lot
right.
of enforcement.
So just curious, Joed, how much was the plane ticket? I mean, you said you have like 5 months to pay them back or something, which means you have to get a green card and get a job and be able to live and save it up. How much do you have to pay back?
It's $1,300. Yeah, $1,300. You know, and it's $1,300 that I have to pay back.
Yeah.
Troy, I think we have our very first Doing the Nun fundraiser that we need to do, man. Like,
yeah,
I think we owe, this is part of our debt too, right? So maybe we can do something to help out, man. I'd really like to be part of that.
Yeah, that would
I mean, I'm not going to say anything. That's up to you guys. So. I don't know, you know.
It puts them in a rock and a hard place because, you know, again, they have to get here, get a green card before they can even apply for work, and then, you know, with no vehicle, no transportation, in a big city, have to try to find a place that'll hire them, you know, and you know, we got a pretty good unemployment rate all around this country, so, and you know, raise enough money to live off of and save enough to get paid back. How do you do that without a car? How do you do that without studying for your license and being able to drive? And, you know, you have to almost be sitting right on top of the place where you're going to work at, and which means that cuts your choices down even more. But
yeah, you are right. I mean, they do rip you off. Everything costs so much. You know the Copenhagen I used to take from you guys back there, the chew.
Not anymore, Red Man.
Yeah. Well, I was trying to buy a Red Man in a Copenhagen. The freaking guy, I mean, ripped me off. They charged me $10 for Red Man and almost $3 for Copenhagen. I was like, next time I'm not gonna buy it. Now I'm just standing here in the line. So that was like, you know, I mean, incredible. Everything is now I know. If you would remember back in America, I mean, back in Afghanistan, when we would smoke cigarettes, so we could offer any Americans, but when they would smoke, they wouldn't offer. So I was like, this is our custom. You
now
offer.
You know why.
And then, yeah, and then now I realize, oh, yeah, I see where they're coming from. So, you know, and now I see that. And so, yes, of course, everything, you know, I mean, earning money and buying things are really pain in the neck, you know. It's just... another word, and
no, it's, you're right though, that stuff did cost. It was it was pretty pricey. But so you hear, is there anything, we're about to run out of time, Joette, is there anything you want to leave with our listeners in the next 2 minutes, anything you want to tell them, or anything you just want to let them know here in America?
Well, you know, I will just touch down back at the SIV process. I, you know, I mean, I sincerely request again the State Department to speed up the process and give the priority first to those, the combat interpreters that are left back, that are forgotten. Those are the heroes that did save a lot of Americans' lives. And, you know, I mean, they are still there. It's a lesson that has to be learned. And if the U.S. goes to another country, these people are there. And then, I mean, this is not what's called that, you know, I mean, international impression. You need to have good impression. And, well, it's great to be here in America. To be honest, it feels awesome. And now at least I'm, you know, feeling calmly and cozy without any sound of bang and boom. So that's good, you know. Yeah,
hey,
that's at least.
Joette, we have a caller that's called in that wants to say hi to you, my man. Go ahead, caller, you're on the air.
Yeah.
What's
sure.
up, my brother from another mother? How you doing?
Oh,
I'm good.
Z-Huba. Oh, this is Sergeant C. What's up, brother?
What's up, Joette? What's up, my brother? Did you bring any Fanta with you?
No Fanta, brother. You need to bring the Fanta. I don't know where to get Fanta.
We'll get you some.
Good to talk to you, man.
My phone's probably going to die in a couple of seconds here, but I just want to say thank you for help keeping us alive. I'm right now on a way. My son's in a car with me, and he's listening to you, and you are a hero to the American people. And
amen.
I am so happy you're in this country, and I wish you the best in your new life and your new home.
Thank you so much. My buddy, I talked already about you, and he said that he's, you know, out of the Army. And, you know, I did ask. I mean, he's witnessing. So, yeah, I mean, when I come to New York, I'm definitely going to see you all, you know, Spanky, Glitter, everyone, you know.
Major Dorn,
everyone.
Absolutely.
Dim,
and,
Jerry.
Top gave me your number. One of these days I'll give you a call. When I got some more time, we can talk. And catch up on things.
Sure.
So,
I will.
Well, just let me go because my phone's about to die.
Okay,
yeah, man,
so
I'm glad you're here. Hey, what's up, Top? You got
all right,
have
buddy.
Fun.
All right, man. Thanks a lot for calling in.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Okay. All right, Joette, we got to get going, my friend. We'll probably have you back on again. And me and Toby are going to put some stuff together. We're going to make something happen to help you out, my buddy. I know you didn't ask for it. I know it's not why you came on. And you never would, but, you know, I know we both feel compelled to. But thank you so much for coming on tonight, man.
You're very welcome, and thank you for having me, you know. Thanks for having me.
All right,
Ewan. Yeah, nice talk to you, dear Toby.
Yeah, you too, my man. We'll be in touch real soon.
Yeah. Cheers, brother. Cheers.
All right, have a good one. Have a good night, Joette.
You too.
All right, there we go. So, great show, Hunto.
Yeah, time to go. Another one went by fast.
Yeah, there we go. All right, everybody, you have a good night, and we'll join you next week.
Thank you for tuning in to Stu and the Nun tonight. We're always grateful for our listeners, both live and those who check out in the archive. Be sure to check out our website at www.stuandthenun.com and like our page, Stu and the Nun, on Facebook, and follow Stu and the Nun on Twitter. And, of course, be sure to join us again next week and every week here on blogtalkradio.com/Stu and the Nun every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern. You all have a good night.